David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 382, our first show of 2022. I'm your host, Steve Raker, hiring heroes from my stronghold in the comic book bunker. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. Our scope is all things Marvel, with a particular fondness for and fascination with the Bronze Age. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on marvelnoise.com. There's that handy little calendar-style drop-down menu on the right-hand side to easily navigate past months and years. Get new episode announcements, give us feedback, and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Plus, find other fine podcasts from our benevolent host Derek Coward and his Deliberate Noise Network, which includes Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics. WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit will be on in a bit to lead our 14th segment covering the 90s New Warriors series with issues 35 to 38 and Night Thrasher number 1. But first I want to tell you about a modern trilogy of 5-issue limited series. The first was in 2020, the second in 2021, and the third is due to hit the stands any week now, here in 2022. It's riffing on the now classic Future Imperfect Hulk series from Peter David and George Perez. It's the Maestro. Now, the Hulk Future Imperfect series was a 2-issue prestige limited series from the end of 1992. And by prestige, I mean it had like the square bound, you know, even though it was sent like a trade paperback almost, even though it was soft cover and new material, not a collection. Although there have been many collections of it since. And the Maestro has appeared many times since, in Peter David's Captain Marvel series from 2000, in the Hulk book when it was the Red Hulk, in the Exiles and the second, or maybe it was the third, Contest of Champions. In Hickman's Secret Wars, he played a major role and was really brought back into the fold. And was in the Old Man Logan book. Heck, he was even in Spider-Man 2099. As well as numerous appearances on video games in the last 30 years. And even an appearance on the Hulk Agents of Smash television cartoon. But this new trilogy of 5-issue limited series are showing how the Hulk became the Maestro. It's the origin of the Maestro, if you will. So the first was just Maestro by Peter David and German Peralta. 5 issues. In the opening sequence is drawn by Dale Keown, which really, you know, brings you back visually to the David's Hulk book back in the 90s. And the opening sequence is all a fantasy. He's actually locked up by AIM and escapes and gets confronted by Old Man MODOK, who explains that World War III occurred and they're now living in the dystopian aftermath. So the Hulk's got to see for himself, and he finds an enclave of human survivors underground who are led by Machine Man, which is pretty cool. And then the Hulk hears of the Maestro in the city, who turns out to be none other than Hercules, who wants to fight the Hulk for sport. Hulk eventually meets Old Man Rick Jones, who's in a wheelchair, with his throne room of artifacts from other Marvel heroes. He tells Hulk that Hercules isn't a benevolent leader at all. and is surprised when the Hulk suggests being a similar type dictator. The Hulk creates these mechanical, brutal dogs of war and attacks Hercules, and Hercules destroys the dog and beats the Hulk down again. Hulk returns years later, now bearded and gray, and gives Hercules a concubine, who turns out to be his ace in the sleeve. It's Vapor from the UFOs, who he had encountered in the AIM facility when he woke up and came across Old Man MODOK and all that. And Vapor goes right up into Herc's nostrils and kills him. And it's worse than that, but I don't want to spoil the whole thing. You know, we like to get you excited to read these books, not tell you all the good stuff. Hulk viciously takes over Hercules' kingdom with his dogs of war, takes the throne, survives an attack, and cuts ties with Rick Jones, calling Rick now an enemy, and calling himself the Maestro. The second limited series was in 2021, also written by Peter David with art by Javier Pina, and it's Maestro Warren Pax, the Pax being post-apocalypse existence. The Maestro is using his dogs of war to get sweeping control of territory, slaughtering the adults, then the children. It's really brutal. He has this human visor, though, that offers some comic relief and just relief from the brutality in general, whose name is Ralph. He's like a survivor of the Hercules regime, who the Hulk keeps around. And it gets used as a, you know, for the Hulk to play off of. Somebody for the Hulk to talk to and react to, you know. So the Hulk sends Ralph to DC to meet with Machine Man in Haven and deliver an ultimatum to them. Instead, they resist and fight and ultimately flee and blow up the Hulk. Then the Panthenon enters the scene. Remember them? The Hulk's old immortalish group of benevolent influencers? They get a visit from Dr. Doom and conspire against the Hulk, and they meet with the Hulk, and it's all cordial and everything until they betray him, capture him, but of course the Hulk breaks free, fights his way out, and wipes them out along the way. The last issue has the Hulk facing off against Doom, and the battle is truly glorious. But the Hulk gets the upper hand, although Doom does escape in the end, leaving things open for the third act that's about to hit the stands here in early 2022. I'm looking forward to seeing how this series wraps up. It was one of those things that I bought because, I mean, why are you not going to buy a Peter David written Hulk story? And especially when it's going to elaborate and embellish his Future Imperfect Maestro stuff. I picked them up, but because it's a limited series and set in a future thing and it was part of a trilogy, and I just let them stack up and sit there. And when I finally delved in and read them in almost in one seating, each of the series, because they were so gripping and it was great to be able to read them in a big chunk, now I'm really looking forward to the third act. All right, time to pass the microphone over to Andrew for some New Warriors.
Welcome back, Marvel Noise listeners. You're in for a treat. Not a hoax, not an imaginary episode. We're back with our New Warriors segment. And unlike, you know, the last time, we haven't had quite the layoff. This time we're getting right back into it. What's the New Warrior segment? Why, it's where we do an exhaustive study on the 90s phenomenon, New Warriors comic book. And who is we, you ask? We is the oftentimes mistaken for a certain other crew that did a deep dive on a 90s book, but we're completely different. We have our expert New Warriors fan, WWX Kev. Say hi, Kev.
I almost thought you were going to start plugging another podcast there.
And then there's me, Andrew the Daily Rabbit. I'm kind of the guy that was out of comics in the 90s. So I remember the beginning of New Warriors. But by the time we're now, I am long since gone. And keeping the trains running on time from the Master Chief segment in the bunker, it's Super Steve.
Hello.
Super Steve has the distinction of reading only the good issues of New Warriors.
Not anymore.
He wishes he never said that.
Not after tonight. No, just kidding.
So if you want to dash back and refresh yourself, you can go to episode 378, posted in mid-November of 2021. But you don't really have to. We try and keep these somewhat standalone-ish so we can tell people where we're at, and part of what that involves is giving the old update. Now, I've decided to try and do this now. These issues we're going to be talking about of New Warriors are in the late 30s, so that doesn't mean a lot to anyone except for Kev, who's memorized publishing dates. So we're talking spring to summer of 93. Going to give a quick kind of touch of that decade because it's pretty important. Cheating a little bit, summer of 89 was the big Batman movie. Comics were hot, leading to 92, where Image Comics starts, Death of Superman, Marvel launches 2099. So we're right on the heels of that. We're before Marvel buys Malibu, before they buy Heroes World, before the bankruptcy in 96 and Heroes Reborn and all that. But just to kind of give you like where we're at. So comics are still, you know, 93. It's still chugging along. If you get your hands on one of these issues, you'll see Marvel is putting out a metric ton of titles.
Yeah.
Of like
yeah.
all the like Barbie and not just the regular stuff. I'm sure Kevin is going to wax poetic about his seven long boxes of Magneto number zero that he has.
Oh, I was going to bring that up. Okay, you want me to blow through all the ads? Because the best ones are really in issue 38. You have, this will set up the era even better. Your comic books are dying. The materials you're using to store your comic books might actually be ruining them. Please preserve your comic books with only the supplies used by the Library of Congress and National Archives from Bill Cole Enterprises Incorporated.
Wow.
Hey, I've had old comic bags melt on me.
Yep.
Yeah, all my comics are dead now due to that ad. I don't know what I'm reading from right now.
They gotta breathe, man. They gotta breathe.
What also is pretty funny, maybe a little in-jokey, appearing in person, Rob Liefeld and Extreme Studios. And also Jim Shooter, founder of Defiant.
Wow.
Grand opening at Mile High Comics Megastore number 2. And then it goes into this whole Jim Shooter will sign autographs and teach you how to create comic books. And they'll be like, due to his unparalleled success at launching comic companies and creating great comics, we anticipate this session will be full.
It went well. I love that. What? The Defiant is going to be, that's what's on his tombstone, right? For the like his great achievement in comics.
Yeah, didn't that guy run Defiant?
You know what's also great? They have a foldout, but it's like a fancy old backpage foldout. But before you get into the Marvel Vision previews in the foldout, they have a Valiant era, now available in trading cards, Valiant Comics ad.
Wow.
Kind of strange.
You also left off the fact, though, Kevin, that it's not just Rob Liefeld. It's unnamed dynamic creators from his studio will also be there.
Wow.
Maybe Yap is there.
Yep, Marat Michaels.
J. Scott Campbell. Was he Extreme? No, he was another one. No, he was Wellstorm. Wah-wah.
Right, with the Gen 13.
So when you open up this foldout for Marvel Vision, the free Magneto Zero is indeed in here, and I got one. But I wasn't the one that bought it. Like, that was a birthday present. Like, someone bought all the other issues, and then they got the Magneto Zero, and that was the birthday present. Pretty awesome.
I knew you'd like... I knew. I'm like, Kevin's going to talk about... I've hosted enough segments with him that I know he's, I mean, I'm kind of surprised you only have one issue, but you probably sold all the rest already.
And then we have some, like, X-Men versus Marvel sort of stuff.
Yeah, a crazy time for comics. We're still in the Tom DeFalco era as EIC. He's going to go. Then there's going to be a little gap of the, you know, editor groups before Bob Harris jumps in. We do have Ron Perlman has taken over the parent company, and it's gone public.
Yeah, but he hasn't destroyed it yet, no, which is why DeFalco... Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, my unofficial opinion is he is, I would say, in my unofficial estimation, is the main mover behind the bankruptcy more than
yes.
Heroes World and all the other. Absolutely. I mean, those didn't help, but...
Yeah.
But he was part of those things, too. You know yes. what I mean? So that all comes back to him. But, the comics were... everybody was expanding exponentially, so much that Jim Shooter is creating popular companies every time he tries. And Marvel's putting out a slew of stuff. Everybody's getting a comic. What's cool is that there's a lot of stuff that was touched upon because they were trying out all kinds of... They brought back Nova, for Pete's sake. They brought back Namorita. They brought back Torpedo in these pages. So it's pretty fun that comics were doing so well that they were going to the well.
And now, Steve, you're back in comics by 93, right?
Back. It was Starlin coming back to Marvel doing Silver Surfer and having Thanos on the cover that I saw on a spinner rack in a 7-Eleven when I was traveling at one point that roped me back in. And I'm reading comics by now and had read some of the New Warriors to this point, but I was not a regular reader because I wasn't a regular reader. I wasn't happy with a lot of things about the book. I did like the artwork of Derek Robertson, though, so as he becomes more established, I slowly start picking up issues again here and there. And coming back to things somewhat after this arc, but not too long after this arc. So this was the first time I had read these issues 35 to 38.
And Kevin, are you now pulling these off the shelf?
Yeah, 26 was my official permanently reading the book.
Nice. Okay, and as I said, I was off it. Little bit of bookkeeping as well. I had started with Omnibus, move to the trade, Darkness and Light. Now, this trade is going to run out in this episode, so I have purchased floppies. However, for those of you that love New Warriors, great news in 2022. Now, because it hasn't happened, the book may be delayed, but at the end of February, Volume 2 of the Omnibus is expected to come out. Now, I know what you're saying, Andy. None of us want to buy Omnibus Volume 2, but what Omnibus Volume 2 means is that Marvel will likely load those issues into the Unlimited app.
Sure.
So therefore, you'll be able to read that way if you don't feel like buying Omnibus Volume 2. I probably am not, but then again, I didn't plan on buying Omnibus Volume 1. So sometimes I'm getting better, listeners, but I do have that terrible disease where you see something really cheap and you're like, oh my God, that's like 100 comics for $20. I gotta buy it. And so I'm getting better, but if I can't say, I promise that if Volume 2 ends up on a steep sale, I won't be like, oh, hand it over.
Yeah, when I had to buy that Ecstatics omnibus for $40 and then lug it halfway across town, that's something you do.
Definitely.
All right.
Even if you have to balance it on your head.
Well, you need to get everyone to sign it, Kevin.
Apparently. I mean, if there'll ever be cons again. I mean, we did get one con in this year, so, you know.
I know. I feel so fortunate that I got Baltimore in and that there were enough people that didn't cancel that it was a good show. Because now I'm seeing all the cancellations again happening at the upcoming cons, and it's like, wow, that was a short little window, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was lucky.
So, yeah, our first two issues, the last ones of the trade. I mean, it ends with the New Warrior swimsuit pinups, which I think we've talked about enough already. But
yet you keep bringing them up, Andrew. You know,
darkness and light. It's the trade. You can go hunt it down. And we're picking up with 35 again, spring of 93. We just had the very exciting Darkness and Light. I'm going to pitch that as very exciting if you didn't listen to our last episode, which included the annual with all the backups. There are things happening with the team, but I feel like this is a good break point. As is tradition, Kevin kind of sets the table by telling us who our new Warriors are.
All right. Our new Warriors are Speedball, Robbie. He has a lot of bubbles. He's usually bouncing around. Namorita, our Atlantean. I mean, that's close enough. Firestar, Angelica, our mutant. Nova, Richard. He flies around a lot. Silhouette, she likes melting into the shadows. Rage, Elvin. Big guy. Strong guy. Not that guy. And then Night Thrasher, Dwayne. He's a skater boy.
And as Super Steve hinted at, normally, and our art team will return, but because of the annual was involved, we have a fill-in team for these first two issues of Craig Brassfield and Jeff Albrecht. Brassfield, not super familiar, did some Marvel, did some DC, did some work for Caliber. I'm not a... these two issues had their ups and downs, but nothing to sell me on him. Gentlemen, any recollections of Brassfield in your own lives?
I have no memory.
Nope, fill-in artist for sure. I do, you know, the cover is the classic, is a version, I should say, of the classic Targets type cover that we've seen done in a different way. And for all the different ways we've seen the Targeting cover done, this one is pretty vanilla. The Targets are all spaced pretty evenly apart with a background behind them all, with the faces in each target. You know, they're not overlapping. There's nothing particularly interesting done about the design. But what is cool about it is his use of the negative space in, back at this time, the direct edition copies that were being sent out to the comic stores didn't have the UPC coding, the bar coding on the front cover. So that box was, you know how in the 80s it was like a little Spider-Man or a John Byrne Captain America head. Well, artists were able to be more creative at this time, and Brassfield squishes in a little Night Thrasher with cloak and dagger in there, like peeking out of the tiny window as if they're all trying to share a peek hole or like look and see what's in a mailbox. And I thought that was really well rendered and well done.
You know, if it didn't say Cardinal on this cover, I might think those targets are a scourge or something.
Well, you got the arm cannon, so you need someone with that on it. But, yeah, and we've got Fabian is the writer, and then Joe Rosen and Joe Rosas for letter and colorist, dueling Joes. Yeah, the Target cover, you're right, Steve. But, you know, if Guardian dies at the end of this, I'm going to be real sad.
So. Get the suit off. Get the suit off. Time's running out.
Unfortunately, I have this in trade because I don't have the valuable first appearance of the supervillain team that we're about to be introduced to.
They're not called Hawks and Doves, are they?
I got to admit, though, comic book confession, I always have kind of liked Killer Shrike.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Great name.
And then Cardinal has the Thunderbolts thing.
Yeah,
thing.
It's got Killer in it. It's a killer name. Yeah.
But some of these costumes are a little yikes.
Yeah. It's the first appearance of two flying sidekicks to go along with Cardinal, who gets sprung out of the joint.
Yeah, and this is the tradition of you wear your costume in jail. Like, for sure they could have got, like, if it's just a suit. Like, and I can understand these other guys. You're an Atlantean, you're in jail, okay. Like, some of those things, Dr. Octopus, yeah, maybe you can't get his arms off, but I mean, Cardinal, I'm like, he was all suited up, ready to go. I guess he just didn't have the ammo in the suit.
Well, he gave him the... He says, suit up, Joshua, Shrike does, and he hands him a red duffel bag, and I thought because it was red, it must have his red suit in it, right? Because you always keep everything the same color. Well, I don't know. I think that this new flying super team probably spent a lot of money on their branding, and it's like, we need a red bag to put your red suit in, like, and I've got a gray bag.
The bag, you would just have enough room to put the ammo in the bag.
That could be.
Well, anyway, this is the debut of Air Force, which is Sparrow, Killer Shrike, Cardinal, and Tanager, which is awfully close to Thanager, you know, like
right.
From the arrivals across the street. What I enjoyed about it was it's not just a flying team. It's a flying team that all have wings, which I thought, well, that's clever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going for a theme, everybody's got wings and can fly.
If you got jet boots, need not apply.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we don't want those guys involved. They're no fun. But anyways, this is just seeding for trouble later on. I mean, we're going to get their adventures in this issue, but I really feel like we're going to see this Air Force as prominent parts of important future events.
So, comic book confession part two. I kind of always liked Killer Shrike. I think of him like as like a good villain in like a Marvel team up, right? Or like an Iron Man book or something. But could he always fly?
I thought he could.
All right.
Maybe not.
Maybe
I don't know.
At his name?
I think of him fighting like on the ground. But yeah, I mean, here he's flying all around and he's leading a team of flying villains, so it just was like, I was just like, Killer Shrike can fly. Cool. He's even cooler.
Well, maybe they had to upgrade him for this whole business.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that cuts to sort of a changing of the guards, much like Spider-Man's maturing. We have Nova maturing, and he's acting as the mentor to the brand new hero we saw introduced in New Warriors 28.
Yeah, I just Turbo. Kept on thinking of Super Steve saying, oh, yes, more Turbo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, at this point, Turbo is one suit shared amongst two people, which is kind of weird. We talked about they had a little funny thing that the one guy who's really into superheroes seems less skilled with the suit. And the sister who's less into superheroes is the one that's better at it at the training. So, I don't know. I guess Kevin isn't considering them part of the team because he didn't include them in his little spiel about who the new Warriors are.
They're peripherals.
I think Nova makes it pretty clear who's a member of the team.
Right. I got to give Brazefield and Albright some props here because I do like how they exaggerate the fact that Turbo's powers are cyclone oriented, like they more so than we've seen in these in the past issues that this character has been reintroduced. When she's flying around and shooting her things and trying to land and stuff, it's really cyclone-y effects around her wrists and feet, and that's kind of cool. Different.
I agree.
Unique.
I also like that it's kind of a fun outfit, but a little bit weird. Very large wrist devices and the ones around her ankles or his ankles, if depending on who's wearing the suit, make it kind of a interesting design, but I gotta imagine hard at times getting those little things going. But this time what it is they've been tracked down by the Air Force and the Air Force ends up attacking, and that's going to be our big battle. We also have interstitials of the other teams, because remember, this is just going to be the two-person Turbo and Nova. And at the time they strike, it's the guy in the suit, Mickey, not the more skilled player. So that's going to be a fun... Nova's talking a lot of trash, but really in trouble. And what I enjoyed about this is, while she's not wearing the suit, this is very old-school 1960s Marvel. She figures out a way to trap them by using the electricity. They're on a football field, and then putting a bunch of water down and getting her partner to come down and blast it, and then electrifies all the Air Force in a pretty cool little half-page splash that I like, too.
Yeah.
That shows a lot of just lettering and zizzing and explosions.
Murders all the Air Force, you mean, with the electrocution. Nova makes a comment about, oh, we better do something before these guys wake up. And I'm thinking, I don't think they're waking up, Nova. Rich, gosh.
Look, he didn't go to medical school, Steve.
Yeah, hey, when you can smell the cooking, what the Rock is cooking, you know? What was interesting about the whole thing of her showing her heroism, right? I mean, they're really contrasting her, the female potential wearer of the suit, with the male potential wearer of the suit. She can fly more gracefully. She's struggling to keep up with Nova, but she is, and she's doing all this maneuvering and stuff, whereas the male who's flying around is, like, floppy and uncertain and isn't, you know, much of, is more of a liability than an asset, which gets shown in the course of the battle, since he's got the suit on and she doesn't. But even without the suit, she shows that she's also the worthy one to wear the suit, because it was never the suit, guys. It was always inside of her, right?
Oh, the magic was in her all along. See, how dare you? I liked in the training, when Nova was like, she was worried about destroying the field, and he's like, hey, if you're going to become a superhero, you know, you got to get used to that collateral damage.
Yeah. Haven't you ever read my series? Do you know how many times I destroyed this field?
But I thought it was a fun, I mean, we'll get into all the little side stories of the other characters in a minute, but just wanted to say, I thought, like, admirable fight scene. Having all flying characters makes it fun, made it a good team up, because, you know, it makes sense. Nova and Turbo can fly. Like you say, Steve, she was clever to fight all this stuff out. Yeah, so I was pleased with that segment. Kevin, any thoughts on the battle?
I mean, you summed it up pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is where you give your emotional, impassioned plea, how it moved you to tears.
You know, for a palate cleansing battle, to let things sit from the big last arc and start moving things in the next direction, it really served its purpose.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that she was like, how did they defeat him last time? What will I do this time? You know, traditional superhero stuff.
So let's push the few plot lines ahead of the other characters. Silhouette, as Kevin mentioned, has a Dark Force-related powers. That's how she's able to melt into the shadow. So she's recovering from our Darkness and Light series. And Night Thrasher, who was kind of on the outs of the team, is getting back into the fold.
Yeah.
And he's saying good things to her. Oh, go on.
Yeah, sorry. It's kind of fascinating that he's talking to Cloak and Dagger and sort of offering them, like, a spot on the team. And I probably didn't have many thoughts on it before, but now I'm like, oh, that would have been, like, how would that have changed the series? That would have been interesting. Maybe you can pull a few readers along if you have Cloak and Dagger in your book. But of course, they're like, no, we're loners. We don't do the team thing.
They've been pretty good. There aren't a lot of consistencies, but I do like that generally Cloak and Dagger, they're not Avengers, like they haven't been.
Yep. They were only X-Men for a little while.
Yeah.
And that's because, like everybody, if you retcon your powers to be mutant, you're sort of an honorary X-Men at some point, somehow, anyways, just by being the whole mutant alone.
But right from the
beginning, I wouldn't advertise that you were in the X-Men temporarily, though.
When you were back at this time, there was buzz about, shouldn't Cloak and Dagger be on the New Warriors? So, like, here we have this team, yeah, Titans-y kind of a team, and once you started going past those analogous type characters from the Teen Titans, then you started being like, all right, well, what other teen characters are there? Oh, and they made it a point to try to cross the paths of a lot of those characters to either
but
just...
only the older teen characters, right,
Steve? Yeah.
Like the ones that had been around? Like, you don't want any new teen characters.
Right. No, the classic ones.
Because it's like, yeah, you have Darkhawk sort of hanging around too. So, I mean, there's a lot of, not like reserve new warriors, but friends in a way.
Even having brought in Rage, who had been running around with the Avengers and stuff. He was a teen character who was floating around. So it was fun, you know, whether it was to get buzz of making people talk about, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, or if it's just to be like, we're the teen book, so we're going to touch upon all these other teen heroes. Fun either way that Cloak and Dagger, you know, were around for a little while. And we'll be back, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably. That would make sense. I know Night Thrasher, like, he's recruiting people, and it seems like he has some sort of plan, and I'm like, well, what's his idea? Like, to pull in more and more. Like, our team's, like, not super big, but they have enough people on it. And he's just like, oh, I need to pull in more teen heroes. And I'm like,
He needs a West Coast.
He has designs on something.
West Coast New Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. If this book sells enough copies, we will launch another book.
Comic sales are never going to go down from 1993, gentlemen. It's a lot. And then the other, so Robbie Speedball, his family's been through a lot, but he's, they've been through a lot. So they're in down market location with graffiti on the walls. And as he's going home, his fellow school chum, Carlton Lafarge, outs him and wants to be the sidekick and is all excited. Sort of, you know, I think channeling Caps, if I may. Mm-hmm. Another teen hero to Nova this time. I think Speedball is supposed to be taking over because Nova, by real world, would be like 40s. And Speedball would only be in his like late 20s to early 30s at this point, using the real timeline.
You know, I didn't realize who that was at first. I was like, where does this go? And then within these issues, you find out where this goes. Then they also have that weird like panel where it's all the spiky. I'm like, what's the choice of doing the spikes when Speedball's all like, huh?
Yeah, a lot of exaggerated, on reveals, very exaggerated facial expressions. And then the most important for our immediate story is Namorita is out partying.
Ooh, yeah. Tripping the light, fantastic.
And ends up falling. She's really drunk, slurring her speech.
Oh, my God. And she sees this guy, and she's like, Bohunk alert. Check this one out. I don't know who he is, but I'm going to eat him alive. And it's like, she's attracted to... Was it just me, or like, she's attracted to somebody who looks like her cousin Namor?
Well, with long, it's the long hair, Steve, that does it. And this guy wears a clothes, unlike her cousin. So
yeah, but with the brow and the widow's peak and the every, I mean, it's weird, is what it is.
Yeah, I guess she's still dealing with some fallout from her trouble overseas. Maybe it seemed like a weird move. I mean, it has a plot reason, but it felt a little weirdly out of character from what we've seen.
Well, she had that armor, remember?
Yeah. But remember, she felt bad about
when
they went overseas and got involved in the war and everything.
Yeah, there is the war thing. These things keep on popping up.
Yep.
But I was like, this seems such a weird segment that I just sort of filed it away, but it'll come back. Okay, so 36, the last issue... in this trade is a Vance Astrovik Honor, Power, and Justice. And he's on the corner with the scales. And now Vance is serving time in the Vault, the prison for superpowered people. The Vault ended up obviously getting supplanted by many other superpowered prisons. But at this point, if you're unfamiliar, it was patrolled by people wearing very scaled down Iron Man armor, guardsmen. They're kind of all in green. Yeah. And they were the ones that patrolled it. Obviously, Iron Man at some point freaks out and doesn't like people using his tech, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, it's the vault. Everybody's cool with these kind of sort of simple, like they have repulsor blasts and jet boots, and sometimes they have other little tricks, but those are pretty much the standard things equipped. And there might be mandroids, I don't recall.
Yeah. I like that this shows like long-term planning, and your book's not getting canceled next week, so like you can set up all these checking in things, because he's in jail, but it's like, well, is he going to be out of the book forever, or?
And the point is, it starts to give us our action sequence. It starts with him training up a bunch of guardsmen, but it looks like it's a real fight, but it's not. And then that's our fake out. And then afterwards, it turns out some of the prisoners are rioting, Attica. And then he's ending up deciding not to escalate. He's going to be like, I'm going to broker, you know, a peace with this thing so that people, you guys stop fighting, and I'll talk to the warden, and we can discuss, like, what's the appropriate level of response to this, which I thought was nice. A superhero comic showing it's not all violence. And interspersed with that is a weird message from Vance from the future trying to clean up the continuity. I gotta say, boys, I might have glazed over a little bit at that bit of housekeeping. How did that strike you?
I was wondering if there was anything else that happened in another book, because I remember one of the original plans was to have a crossover with the Guardians of the Galaxy, but I feel like that never took off in the way it could have.
Yep, but it's at a time where Vance is bumming out, and it gives, you know, it's a message from not only his future self, but his future self who's now all decked out and taken on the role of a future Captain America. So it's got like the weight of like a Captain America inspirational speech mixed with the fact that it's your older self telling you to like buck up, and you've had it pretty tough, and it was tough with our parents, and, you know, hang in there and be the hero that you know you can be. And he's like, okay, Cap, you know, just I got, you know, it's one of these deals. But what I also really enjoyed is some of just the images around the vault as they're walking around in the in the jail. You know, you get to see the mandrel getting pushed along in shackles, and then like in the lounge, the TV lounge, is the Mad Thinker and Krang and the Corruptor and Orca all hanging out.
I was trying to figure out who all those guys were, because I'm like, if it's a Mad Thinker, and I'm like, man, he looks like, he's like, ugh, I have to watch this. Like, the other guys seem to be enjoying the TV series, and the Mad Thinker is like, I'm too intellectual for this show.
Totally. And the other guy in the back is Shrunken Bones.
Yeah, the Orca guy is always funny, too. He's giving a thumbs up, it looks like, or pointing, happy about the prison. Yeah, I think we mentioned this in a recent Marvel Noise. I'm more for just kind of burying unfortunate bits of continuity you don't want to deal with, rather than trying to rehabilitate it in some weird way. But, yeah, like you say, Steve, with the Captain America imagery, we get the rah-rah thing. And to be fair, up until this point, I still don't think of Vance as much of a character.
No.
So I guess this is going to be his thing, is like, hey, I'm out there trying to do the right thing, and that isn't always punching people, even though it's a superhero comic.
Let me correct myself. I don't think of this young Vance as much of a character. I think of Vance Astro as the dude in the space, the Buck Rogers. The Buck Rogers of the Marvel Universe.
He can't have a rip in the suit or he'll die type of thing.
Until he wears the Cap costume. Then he's fine.
I don't recognize that, Steve, but I'm glad that you do. I think it's important to have those things. So, yeah, fun pushing his storyline. He's the star of it. As noted before, let's cover a couple of the... There's two other subplots pushing forward, and that's Robbie and his new schoolmate, Carlton, and he just doesn't want to deal with him. And Carlton is about... You know, Robbie's like, look, you can't hang. You don't have superpowers. Who are you, Eugene the Frogman? No, he doesn't say that, but Eugene had a power suit of a frog. But the whole point is, obviously, he's looking out, worried about Carlton. But Carlton takes a real ugly turn I never like it when they make like the geeky loser kids like power mad hungry jerks and threatens to reveal Robbie's secret. Like, that's a real not cool move, man.
Yep.
Like, how are you a superhero if that's your go-to? Like, that already says you're not a good guy.
Yep. It's them trying to do the, like, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer thing, though, of, like, let's take things that happen to you as teen and try to, you know, do it with using the metaphor of the genre story we're trying to tell here, right? So it's like they're using superhero-type elements to do the old, you know, someone's going to tell a secret on you that, you know, it seemed to me just the type of thing a cruddy teenager would do.
Yeah, I just didn't like these, like, clearly the entry point for the reader, some, you know, loser sycophant who likes superheroes, and he's the guy that's the big jerk, you know, and I'm like, hey, wait a second, that's my entry. I'm that guy. I don't want to be a jerk. I would never blackmail Robbie.
How about the art on this Namorita sequence?
Really bad.
She says, "I did what?" in that one panel, and I'm like,
so
what
bad.
Like the worst panel in this whole issue.
Yeah, it's so exaggerated and bad, and it's particularly across that whole sequence that must have been the last thing he did, and it was rushed, or that was the thing he did in the middle of the night, or when he wasn't feeling good but had to keep pushing along like a good soldier or something, because it's bad.
Weird bed with all the, I mean, seashells and coral and whatever's going on there.
What happens is important, though, because
the
Submariner lookalike that she took home to bed for a one-night stand wasn't there when she woke up, and she's not too happy about having done that while she was inebriated and out, and doesn't yet realize that he stole, like, a journal that has the identities of the New Warriors in it.
Mercifully, they put that at the last page, because I didn't get the significance of her book being gone either at first, because I was like, oh, is it the records? Because this is Oracle Inc. And I was like, oh, maybe he's like an industrial sabotage. But he actually looks like that, which is weird. I'm like, well, I don't know how he landed her looking like that, but I guess the cousin thing works.
Yeah, the creepy factor. The Oracle Inc. is just that it's an Oracle book journal, because she used to work, that was Namor's company in the Burn Run.
And that's why I thought it was like stock records or something.
No,
I didn't realize it was her notes.
It's her diary, because it has an NP on the front. A little like NP patch for Namorita Prentice or whatever her last name is. And then it's got a little bookmark with a little seahorse on it. So it's like her journal.
Yeah, until they explained that, Dan, like I said, I thought it was some kind of, I had her initials, but it was like her stock certificate or, you know, like, because it's the company name. So I'm like, oh, it's some corporate records or something that she had that she's going to get in trouble now because they're missing. But at the end, for us dummies, they do explain that it's her journal. And speaking of plot lines they could have left, Four Control comes back, and it's the Poison Memories gang.
Oh, boy.
Kevin, you're the big Night Thrasher Four Control expert.
It's amazing that we covered that. Let me just say, because I don't know if we're covering Four Balance, probably not. But it's amazing that we did the most in-depth coverage that anyone will ever do on that series.
But I can tell you, listeners, if you're interested, there are plenty of copies of that on eBay.
that's his first series, even if it's a mini series. They use the series loosely, so if he ever gets a movie or anything, that's the first one, right?
I have no. All I know is that if you're because spoiler alert, we had been debating about how much of Night Thrasher's about to get his own solo series, the last 23 issues. I've been, due to the recent, for those of you in the know, back issues have kind of gone up, and I did not feel like paying the sort of prices to land that series currently. But I did order a copy of number one, which isn't going to make it in time for this recording. But I'm on board. We may cover more of it, but that's kind of why I was doing all those eBay searches. And it's you can get four control. That one has not jacked up through. I assume they're going to treat his first appearance in New Orleans.
I mean, honestly, guys, we're never going to get to the good issues if we keep going off on these, like, tangential other appearances things. So I say if it's a whole series, you know, if it's a one-shot, if it's an annual or whatever, I get it. But if it's a whole series that they try, that's for another day, my friend.
I'm just saying, Poison Memories, it's part two of three. So I was like, Night Thrasher number one. I mean, the rest of the series, you don't really have to. Well, there is those two other crossover issues, but basically, like, you can ignore that Night Thrasher series. And I think we're more interested at, like, in many years to cover that Nova series before we ever cover the Night Thrasher series.
Yeah, but that's for, I just wanted to spoil that, because as we head into 37, Andy's moving to floppies. Mercifully, our regular, well, not mercifully, that seems a little mean, we're getting our regular art team back. And what's also interesting is you get an alternate cover on the inside. But this cover features the main story plot line of Rage. And Rage is a character, as Kevin noted, their big strong guy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's weird because I actually looked up once we saw that alternate cover. I actually looked that up. I'm like, I don't remember ever seeing this. And I look it up and I'm like, yeah, it's not even on, like, it's not for purchase or anything, so.
Nice. Well, this opens up, as we hinted at the end of the last one, there's going to be a strike against the loved ones. Because we are into the 90s, and that means we need to ratchet up the violence and gratuitous action a little bit and sort of raise the stakes in a way that I guess you can do, but I feel like it's so over the top.
Well, look at that cover.
Yeah, well, it opens with like a rocket launcher into Rage's home, which doesn't do anything to Rage, but kills his grandmother. Yeah. So it's this whole family values on the splash page opens with like this. It's a really nice one. Like, he's a big guy kind of bent over his grandmother, like just crying. And like, that's a nice page.
Yeah. It's his Uncle Ben moment.
Yeah, except it's the 90s, so he's going to get a little less Peter Parker, a little more Punisher. Oh, but
yeah, that's I was going to go
gonna
there.
He's going to become like Spider-Man in his black costume. You know, he's going to go put on his murder clothes and maybe threaten to kill some people.
So, Robbie Ryder, brother we know from Nova series, gets kidnapped.
Dope.
Someone we haven't seen in a few issues, the love interest of Vance, Firestar, her father gets gunned down at the door.
Ding tong.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't that? It's ding it's so tong? Like.
It was an odd. I thought that was an odd choice.
It is.
Just saying.
But I think of Killing Joke, and what probably brought me to that is on the later issues. This is Death in the Family as well.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get to that when they call this thing Death in the Family. I'm like, I think in the late 80s, DC sort of laid claim to that title. But basically, we find out that they went over the top.
Yeah.
And the big boss is going to punish them. They weren't supposed to kill the grandmother, or they were supposed to kill Speedball's dad because he's a DA. Yeah. So now they're switching the plan up to just kidnap him instead, because I don't know how they calculated that. But I guess being a DA and they're criminals.
I mean, to their credit, he says, well, since that we've already did our quota of dead people, so we don't want to kill extra dead people.
Yeah, now it just seems like killing a DA gets a lot of extra attention. Yeah.
What's even better is that the Namor guy is now rendered by Robertson very un-Namor-like and has his own has his own look now.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone's... It's settling back into that new Warriors look again.
Yeah, he still looks kind of greasy, though, Steve.
Yeah.
Between you and me. And then Angelica goes home to find her dad and freaks out. She's got dropped off because she doesn't have her license yet. And her friend, she just freaks out and she's like, oh my God, whoever did this is going to answer to Firestar. And then I guess her friend didn't know because she was like, Firestar?
Yeah, I know. Her friend's like sort of shell-shocked there.
But the point was the dad wasn't dead. She has to race him to the hospital. And look, she can't come up with some flimsy excuse. It's the 90s. We're giving up on secret identities. That's just for kids. But, you know, murdering lots of backstory isn't.
Taught me anything. I mean, you just convince superheroes to give up their secret ID and then nothing happens. Of course, Tony has it made, though, so. And he doesn't have any powers.
Namorita finally gets a call that tells her to, haven't you noticed that your book is missing? And she's like, no, I hadn't. Oh, my book is missing? What? That guy, he robbed me.
That's not great.
Yeah. And her face is looking back into the proportions and appearance we're used to as well. Remember, this is all to get out Night Thrasher. And so, continuing our other plot line, Carlton shows up in a Irving Forbrush style outfit with a pilot helmet and bicycle rear view mirror on his head.
Is this the character find of the year?
Hindsight lad. And now I have this in floppy. So will we go with Carlton's first appearance or first appearance in costume, Kevin?
Which one will the market decide they want?
So it's played for goofs because he's like, I'm hindsight lad. I don't have any superpowers, but I'm a strategic genius and I can figure this out. And again, pushing the blackmail angle, Andy no like. But that's the moment when they get the call, his mother gets the call that the father's been kidnapped. So that means that foresight lad overheard that, which may be important. And, you know, at that moment, the riders, Rich has gone back, have dinner with the family, and that's when they find out about Robbie. So then we can have the whole team back. Firestar's got a jacket. and then they can...
It's not the whole team, though, which plays... No. Is the crux of this whole thing. This is all to get back at Night Thrasher specifically. He's not even on the team right now. He's not even around. When they assemble, he's not around. He's not there. This isn't striking at him. This is striking at everybody else but him. He doesn't have family.
So when he was offering Cloak and Dagger membership, was he building another team?
I don't know.
I mean, Fabian does like having two teams in a team book.
Yeah, well...
Blue and gold.
We have the crew, sans Night Thrasher, but Silhouette's there, who hasn't had anybody kidnapped in this. And this is where, you know, they go on speakerphone and get the ominous message where he's like, yeah, you guys are going to now, I'm taking control. And if you don't, I'm going to kill your loved ones. But I did screw up and I did kill the bad guys that accidentally killed people that they weren't supposed to.
Yeah. I mean, he has a weird sort of honor.
Yeah, but then he goes on to chop off Bobby Ryder's finger.
Yeah.
As evidence. Yeah.
So
full nine fingers.
If we go back
no
and look at those...
He's no longer going to be a math whiz, Kev, because he can't count to 10 anymore.
If we go... Well, that's why he has to be...
Have five... Yeah, he has 10 fingers and 2 thumbs? Or that's just because they're poison memories and they're not good with... Stuff like that.
I think he has to be a math whiz more than ever before because he can't rely on counting to 10 on his fingers. And I want to go back and read those Guardians of the Galaxy issues from the last few years and see if Robbie's got all his fingers or not.
I was thinking, I'm like, wondering how Hawkeye's scar, that's going to last.
How that talent.
They've talked about stuff like that before, like a scar or losing a finger. That's the hardest thing to keep track of.
Until the Punisher takes off his shirt, then you see all the scars. They're all there.
Yes.
It's hard to track that from issue to issue, though, Steve. So that makes it a little bit tricky. But anyways, this is where... So, another great half-lash of Namorita upset about this. Yeah, just having the art team back really helps the book thing.
Yeah. Yep.
But Rage is out, as Kevin said. He has his murder outfit, which is,
yes,
you know, got spikes and chains.
Yes.
Still has the big R on his belt.
This is one of the better outfits he wears.
It's like Jason Voorhees his hockey mask look.
Well, you know they say that thing, like, kids like chains? Kids also like spikes.
Sure.
Yeah. This is kind of a preview of Penance before Penance, but the part that sells me is, like I said, the big R for the belt buckle.
Yep.
Like, that is... Because he's like Galactus. I'm going to eat your planet.
I'm going to raid your planet. Yeah, and Namorita's just totally killing herself with guilt.
Yeah.
So what the blackmail deal is that they want... The bad gang wants the new warriors to surrender themselves to them, and that will save their family. So the team decides, well, all right, we've got to do that, but Rage ain't having that, and he puts on that murder suit and goes off on his own.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the prisoners do turn themselves in for a great panel. Again, no Night Thrasher, but they're all heads bowed and like high tech, you know, aim tech handcuffs and everything.
Yep.
But that was another cool one. But that leads to our missing member, Night Thrasher, our hero who overheard, you know, Foresight Lad, went to Night Thrasher and told him what's going on. So now Night Thrasher is going to be the one. And in the very smallest of little boxes, they note that this is continued in Night Thrasher number one. Like, no copy of the cover page or any, like, hey, true believers, you're not going to be able to hold your water when you hear about this new exciting series from the pages of New Warriors.
Well, funny you should say that, Andrew, because somehow I got Night Thrasher number one. Oh. And I never bought another issue of the series.
Wow.
Mine's in the mail, so.
Between that last page and maybe Wizard Magazine and my limited cash, I was like, I gotta pick up Night Thrasher number one. Which is funny, because later on, when we get into some crossovers, I don't pick up, like, the extra issues in other books. Like, I'm too... Yep.
You're learning.
...distracted by, like, other comic books to get all the crossover parts. But for this thing, I'm so there for Night Thrasher number one.
All right, it's all on you, Kevin. What are we missing? Who's the team? Can you give us a synopsis? Steve and I are in the dark.
First, I got to tell you, it has one of these fancy, like foil embossed covers.
Oh, boy.
I know, like, around the cover, it has, like, the prismatic red foil thing going on. And then it tells you it's the first kick butt issue.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And yeah, zero his issues,
armor
no fun.
Is like the red, and then like his figure is running on the cover dynamically, and that's the pop out. Good embossment. Oh, and then on the inside, if you want to know, a superhero for the 90s, Meteor Man.
Never read it.
So some of this first issue is a recap of, like, Night Thrasher talking about his origin. Then they recap how he joined the New Warriors and their adventures for the first 25 issues. I mean, probably good info if you didn't read those New Warriors issues. Like, you want to know, maybe you're just like, hey, this Night Thrasher guy seems cool. I don't know anything about the New Warriors.
Everyone's number one is somebody's number one, so.
Who's the artist?
I don't think it's anyone I recall.
Okay.
So it starts with Night Thrasher, as you can imagine, beating up some dudes, doing his whole grim, I'm gonna kill you or chop your head off or
yeah, that's his
do
move.
Some other do some other violent stuff to you to some gang members.
Like, have you seen my skateboard blade?
Yes. And he also has the stick.
Right. Sharp stick.
Nice stick to beat you down.
He's got a gun.
no gun at this point.
I hate guns.
But you...
They killed my family.
He's a terror in the night?
Kevin's never going to get through this issue.
Yeah. We just need...
You remember For Control, how the issue started with him beating up some people? Pretty much the same thing here. Many pages of him beating up some people and trying to get some info. And lodged in this issue is a Plasm ad, a special announcement. Plasm second edition comic collector album offer.
Jim Shooter's at it again.
I know, right? You like me at Marvel. Just wait till we rebirth the universe again. So eventually, Night Thrasher gets some of his info, and then we check in with the bad dudes, the Poison Memories, or as they call them in here, just Mems. And at first you're like, Mems? And you're like, oh, right, Poison Memories, right. Is, I guess, a cool slang, they call them the Mems, right?
Very
so anyways, cool. They have these this crate that, because they've been dealing with AIM, and then you know, some of the different Poison Memories gang members aren't 100% along with this. So they're just like, oh, you're dealing with AIM? Aren't they terrorists? And he's like, arms dealers. Like, arms dealers is like, why didn't you just say scientists? Like, scientists would probably be the best way to sell it. If someone tells you terrorists, you don't say arms dealers. That's totally better, right?
Hey, they're a gang, but they're a gang with honor.
Apparently. But so you're thinking, oh, what's in here? Another rocket launcher, some more weapons? But it looks like a modified Night Thrasher helmet. Suspicious. So yeah, you check back in with Night Thrasher again. He's hunting down some leads. He also checks in with Cord. Remember him?
Oh yeah. I always picture him in a hospital bed now.
I mean, right here, it's not much different because he's trying to walk with a walker, and he has all like the braces on his legs and everything. So, even though he's learning to walk again, Night Thrasher still has to get into a fight with him, right? They argue about some stuff, and then it's like, oh yeah, you're going to lecture me on that? Remember how we got into the situation in the first place when you did all that crazy stuff with my history and blah, blah, blah. And then you have the Chopper Lady 2 has been flying around the city looking for Rage. You know, if Rage would have just stayed with the New Warriors, like, everything would have worked out so much better. Hmm. Like, they wouldn't have wasted all this story real estate.
But wasted? Yeah. They need to fill those pages. Someone's got to get paid.
Apparently. So back on the streets, not Night Thrasher, but kind of looks like Night Thrasher, has shown up and started gunning down other gang members of the Mems. So they have what they got from AIM, one of the things maybe, I'll just leave it at that, is this weird amalgamation of Night Thrasher's colors and costumes, but it also looks sort of like a robotic Iron Man armor. So he's pretty much gunning people down while Night Thrasher just hunts down some more people, talks some more people. And then we check in on the New Warriors, who are still hanging upside down. So of course you know who's going to come to the rescue, right? I mean, Night Thrasher. But first he has to take care of fake Night Thrasher. So they have a multi-page big fight. One of them gets hit by a train. Guess who? Fake Night Thrasher. Fake
Night Thrasher.
It's kind of funny. Like, you don't really see so much. Like, just the mask is left behind. Is he dead? Who knows? But anyways... Night Thrasher shows up to that warehouse, rescues the New Warriors, and then they're gonna, I guess, get their family members, I guess you could say.
Rescue the hostage is.
Yeah. And then it teases the next issue, and it's like something like, Silhouette, his enemy? Get here for Night Thrasher number 2, which I didn't do.
All right. Well, that's, I had surmised as much. I mean, obviously your failure to buy issue 2 speaks somewhat to your satisfaction with issue 1, but the important thing was we got to the bridge, because when we picked back up with 38, the new warriors are free. That's pretty much all that from this continuity. The only thing that happens is the new warriors are now free, as opposed to at the end they were captured.
Yeah, it's weird when you have an issue number 1 that's part of a crossover. So I'm thinking, yeah, there's probably a lot in that Night Thrasher where they're just setting up the book. And you get to enjoy one thing, but they don't want to derail like the whole New Warriors thing. So if you miss that issue, it's like, it's not a big deal. I mean, they got free.
Yeah.
Night Thrasher did a bunch of stuff.
That's about all you get from this perspective. But it opens with Rage, who has had a slight modification to his costume in the coloring department. And I wonder if they're going to fix it. In the last appearance, he had these kind of green forearm covers, which I think was just them mistakenly coloring that, because they're gone in this one. And his bandana was green and not red. So,
Andrew, it's covered in blood.
Yeah, but none of it splashed anywhere else. But he's wrecking up the place. And Andy's, well, visually impressive, my least favorite gimmick of the 90s, the splashes that go the wrong direction, i.e. well, the vertical splashes.
I didn't remember that, but I find it funny that he's so raging that he's raging like out of the comic book, and he, as he's bigger, the panels, the pages are bigger, and then he just starts yelling and screaming over and over again about how his granny was killed and how he's raging, and then like the comic can almost not contain it.
We couldn't do that the other way oriented. But they're pretty pictures. And that's my personal pet peeve. I just always feel like it needs a pretty good story justification to change my page orientation. But yeah, you're right. It is cool that he gets bigger and bigger and angry. But this is where, as you said, we're back, you know, with the helicopter pilot Sprocket.
Because we almost have a rundown where Rage is going to face off against the police and probably get shot again.
So Sprocket picks him up and like, let's go do this. She was introduced with so little fanfare in the original series that it was weird. But anyways, so they're now they can pair up with the other one. Now we cut to Night Thrasher with the rest of the new warriors free, but they're going to go do it. And it's interesting, again, Nova reflecting his maturity and his grown-upness. When Nate Marita just wants to trash everything, he's like, hey, we got to be quiet. We got to sneak in. We got to, like, I like this. They're showing him as a more thoughtful warrior when we're used to him being headstrong and charging in.
And even though everyone is grim and gritty, because after all, it is the 90s, how great are these faces in this whole sequence, right? Every one of them, it's whatever he's using for reference, it's fantastic. And he's finally deciding what he wants Nova to look like under the mask, too. Kind of that wide face with the big lip and the not shaven scruffiness and the longer hair in the back. He's finding his groove with some of these characters.
This Nova wouldn't be out of place in Mega City, right, Steve?
Yeah.
And even Robbie's not up. He tries to make a joke and he just doesn't feel it.
Now I really want some Nova stories where he's just walking the beat on Xander Prime or whatever, trying to keep the peace in the city blocks.
So obviously we need something to elevate our regular guy so we can fight them. So he has some experimental tech armor that's, you know, super dangerous and going to kill everybody, that he can lower himself into pretty cool way. Like he's on chains and he lowers himself in, and that's always smart because some of these armors, they look so big. You're like, how do you get into that? Well, you lower yourself in with chains.
Yeah. Yeah. But make sure you assemble every single part of the thing.
But I don't care about this guy. I mean, floor control washed over me like so many comics I read and forget. So it's a little bit of a shame with that, that that's the basis of this. But yeah, he shows up in giant mech armor. Like,
yeah,
this is,
so it's a big panel because it's another big scene with a big character. So we're busting out of the page again.
And just before that shows up, when they find Bobby and the other hostages, and Bobby's got a bandage on, so he did get his pinky finger cut off there.
Yeah. Well, at least they bandaged them up.
How great is that Namorita panel at the end of that page, man. Though?
Yeah.
It's like an upshot. An upshot of a female is always a tough one. You're so tempted to do the Gil Kane nose, you know? And... Robertson doesn't. He does his own vibe and still has like the muscular neck, but keeps it feminine. Really good panel.
Mary, I completely agree. I like that one a lot. And it's his left hand, Steve, if you want to, you know, run around and check up on those old issues for which finger he's missing. But basically, again, Nova reminds them, like, hey, flyers fly and take the people out. So that means that we're going to take Nova and Namorita off the board. So that just leaves Night Thrasher and Firestar. I don't know what happened to Silhouette. I assume she was killed in Night Thrasher 1, Kevin.
Isn't she melting in the shadows, checking out all the...
Is that what we're going to say? She's melting?
I mean, it works. It's convenient.
Yeah, but that leaves her out of the battle.
Through the series too is Firestar not wanting you to use her powers, and now she seems more willing to just power up and just shoot anything in her way.
Yeah,
especially
she's gonna...
with that added motivation.
Yeah, she's going to microwave that guy. But it's a fun mech armor with missiles and blasts and everything.
Yeah,
he shot her bad.
Yeah, and he's willing to die. But they overload his little dumb machine, and in a brilliant like explosion panel with him crawling from the wreckage with everybody. I mean, Speedball has an unfortunate positioning in the explosion, but we won't linger on his his image. So he's going to do in Night Thrasher. But just as he's, you know, crawling to him with a knife, a broken piece of armor or mirror or something to slit the unconscious Night Thrasher's throat. Who shows up, Kevin?
Rage.
Your death, Ashu. Your death. And then a pointless banter that didn't move me to tears, but if either of you gentlemen want to wax poetic on it.
I was kind of thinking when he was crawling from the wreckage, it was kind of like Star Trek II.
Huh.
With his skin melting off and everything.
I did like that, like a regular human coming out of a broken mech would have boiling hot fluids on him and stuff. And let's face it, we all wanted to see this guy suffer a little bit.
Yeah, he's not nice. Namorita might still like him, but the rest of us have cooled on him.
Yeah, so Rage makes his arguments about wanting to kill people, and... Poison Members dude isn't convinced and stabs him in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, so Rage gets filled with rage.
Yeah, I mean, stabbing him with a piece of metal is not... I mean, the guy's like the size of a house or whatever. Like,
yeah.
That's not an effective attack, but it gives him the additional page space to snap his neck.
Yeah, and then the
which Night Thrasher sees
is even bleeding.
Yeah, a Night Thrasher witnesses that. And very interesting with those parallel panels that we saw earlier that made us think of The Killing Joke when Angelica's Firestar's father had the door opened up on him and was shot. You know, the old ding-tong. then this sequence is like the end of The Killing Joke, right? With the holding him up and the neck snap. pretty weird.
Yeah, I kind of, me, it felt almost because of the size of the character, more like the death of Superman. You know, you got the big guy beating up the poor. You know, the other guy's got the what passes for dark hair, that blue hair that goes for black hair in comics. Muscular dude. And then Rage just looks like this giant. And he kills him. Snap.
Yep.
Just like Spider-Man did to Gwen Stacy.
And then the police come in and it puts them on the spot, right? What's going to happen here? Is Night Thrasher going to come clean, or but he chooses to protect his boy?
Yep.
It was a matter of family honor, which sounds kind of hokey. The other thing I thought was weird is, like, didn't they fly the dad away? But I guess they just flew him outside to the cops, and that was far enough. But I'm like, I would have gotten him as far away as I could. But yeah, so then now Night Thrasher, although he's not standing with them, which is kind of weird, but he is clearly, you know, back on the team, I guess. I don't know. It was, what, as Kevin noted, it's kind of funny that we didn't really need to read the second part.
I mean,
I will be reading it when it comes in, but I'm just saying, we didn't
need,
like... Well,
when you read it, Andrew, tell me how much you enjoyed it.
Well, maybe I'll love it so much I'll be buying the rest of it. But I thought these were fun. I mean, you know, there's some 90s to it. It's so overwrought with the...
Yeah.
That part
I feel like we had several, like, we had some one-offs, and then some, like, the Forces of Darkness light thing. I'm like, that wasn't great. And I feel like this is, like, it's over the top, but it's getting more into what I remember the New Warriors being.
Me too. The team is changing. The book is changing. There's the way it was for the first dozen to 20 issues or so, and now there's a shift happening, and it's partly, it seems, driven by having the new art team, that it's like now they're going to have their run on it, and the kids aren't living at home for the most part now, or they've had their homes destroyed and they've had to grow up in a hurry. They're going to act more like a young adult super team than a bunch of teenagers who are getting together in the clubhouse.
And the art is so
good.
They'll
try to change the world.
Man, I'm really loving the team they put together to, yeah. I mean, the fill-in. It was a little hard on the fill-in team, and it's not their fault, but man, I like these guys they got going now.
Oh, yeah.
So good, so good. But any last thoughts, gentlemen, or should we wrap this up?
I'm looking forward to some more New Warriors, because we got some, from what I remember, we got some good stuff coming up.
Cool.
I think
cool.
The title's really, really hitting its stride again.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll have more gritty 90s with pretty pictures coming at you soon.
Until it's revealed that Rage's grandma was really an actress being paid to play the part and still living somewhere in captivity, just waiting to be rescued. Make mine Marvel. Later.
We interrupt this regularly scheduled ending for a special announcement. WWX Kev has joined me. Listeners, we have some good news. My eBay purchase arrived of Night Thrasher number one. So I thought I would join in with a few comments. Kev has graciously joined me. Kev, you still there?
Yeah, I guess we should have held off, or I'm not quite sure what we should have done, but...
No. Well, part of it is, while I paid less than cover price... That was before shipping. So I think this guy probably felt bad for me buying clearly what should be a quarter bin box. But I have it here, and I wanted to say, I think you did a great job. I just had a few follow-ups. First of all, I really do love, I see why you guys in the 90s love these metal covers. They are fun.
I was rubbing my hands on all over the surface going, yeah, look, it's embossed right here.
I like to... wave it from side to side so the light kind of shines all over it. But
yeah, well, when we were recording, I was definitely doing that because I wanted to get the glow.
I just wanted to make it clear to the listeners, who I'm sure know this, but there has a short backup feature where he reiterates his origin, and that's Bagley and Malstead. And it was nice to see Bagley return to cover some of that stuff. And it just you know, I'm sure they might have even lifted panels, but it because it's a retelling, they had to draw a bunch of it as he's giving the speech to a bedridden. And then I think, I don't know if we mentioned it, but the opening credits, I know you were looking, it's in the graffiti on the wall, and it's Javier Saltaires, the Ghost Rider guy. I think of him as Ghost Rider. I know he did work for Dark Horse as well. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, I was trying not to, whatever I was doing. You know, I was like scrambling, like, where is the thing? I don't want to leave and Super Steve with all his editing and all that. So, yeah.
Well, what it is it's they do it like it's graffiti on a wall that the character is in.
That
so I
sense.
Can see how you would miss that. But yeah, the summary, as you said, I just wanted to sort of, to me, it read like a bad version of Iron Man 200. As you mentioned,
what?
They have the doppelganger Night Thrasher armor. But like Stane, it's bigger and like spikier. So I think you're supposed to think he's the underdog, he being a Night Thrasher.
Huh.
As they fight, the villain is hanging from a wire as a train is approaching. And Night Thrasher explains that he didn't betray the Poison Memories. They were founded by a North Vietnamese general. And I killed that guy. You know, see the Four Control series. Actually, don't see the Four Control series. I can't. I don't. That just didn't, it washed over me, Kevin. Did Four Control stay with you at all?
I think it's better than this first issue.
Okay,
I mean, that doesn't say too much, but...
Kevin's thumbs up, I'm thumb sideways on it. But anyways, so at the when he gets that, the guy's hanging, and it's, don't quit, don't give up on life. I do not give up on life, Night Thrasher. Life gives up on me. And I think it's implied that he lets go so he can be killed by the train.
I'm not sure if it's because of the comics code or because, even though it's extreme 90s, like, they don't, like, if this was done, like, later or if it was, I don't know, an epic book or something, would they have shown, like more, like blood on the tracks or something? Like, it's just a stray helmet.
Right. Well, I just meant it more from the perspective of, like, it's a doppelganger character that in the end gives up and kills themselves.
Yeah.
It's just not as, like, the Stain had been built up to be a bigger thing. That's why, for me, it was like, this guy, I didn't really care about him, the villain.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Iron Man stuff is kind of a big deal, a big story, if you know the
but
end
this
of that
is the
story,
same
too.
Thing. Like,
and
your doppelganger with a big armor... ends up losing and killing themselves, you know.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of doppelganger stories, but yeah, they don't all necessarily kill themselves, but I don't know, I guess because of the other part of the story, too, where yeah, he kills the two guys that end up messing up New Warrior's family, but then, like, it doesn't end there, because once someone's like, oh, I don't know if we should be in bed with terrorists, or, oh, I'm not on the game plan 100%. Like, the fake Night Thrasher armor guy goes out and, like, starts murdering, like, all those other people, too, from the Poison Memories. So you're gonna... There's not many Poison Memories gang members left after this.
No. Well, I also feel like... I think I would have preferred a doppelganger with, like, the same armor, but, like, just a different color scheme. Rather than, like, the bigger armor with the little spike gauntlet thing. And all. It just felt like that's what also the Stain thing with, like, well, we can't just give him Iron Man. You got to give him it bigger so he looks like the underdog.
Or what if he was wearing Night Thrasher's old costume or that costume?
Oh, that would have been better, yeah.
Yeah, like from that original one from issue 25 type of thing. But this one's just all bulked out and, like, some like Iron Man knockoff.
Yeah, that's what it, so that part. And then I guess for the plot line point, I would also say that when he frees the New Warriors, he points out that they could have freed themselves.
Well,
yeah. And they're like, no, we couldn't because they have the prisoners.
That was their whole thing of why they were going to turn themselves in. And then they thought that they could easily get out. But I think they also weren't expecting that the AIM, like, oh, a street gang has this sophisticated AIM.
Yeah. But I think the point, that was just to make it look like the New Warriors aren't chumps. This isn't a big, it was the prisoners that was the motivation. And then the last point, Oh, go on. Sorry.
That's the thing about rage too. Like, sure, they can accept like rage is not agreeing. Whatever the poison memories guys, if they believe that or not, I mean, rage could have found the hostages or whatever first, and then they're like, this doesn't go according to plan, and got everyone killed.
Yeah. And then I would say the last significant point, on a beautiful panel of Namorita, she's explaining that, like, you know, this guy's going to die. And then that puts Night Thrasher in the position of saying, killing him isn't the answer. And so it's funny that he had started out as kind of a bloodthirsty character, and now he's the one that's, you know, that's like, oh, we can't kill him. We're all good people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Peace and love. Kiss, kiss, hug, hug. Obviously, he doesn't do that, but I'm exaggerating for comedic effect. But anyways, those are, I would say, the few plot points I would have added, plus yeah. noting the Ghost Rider artist was an addition.
I was trying to blow through that, it rather quickly since I was the only one that had read it.
Yes. No, I think you did a great job. I just thought for the continuity, those are the elements I would add. And then the seller also felt bad for me, included from the 1993 Skybox Marvel cards, number 100 Death Watch.
Oh, nice.
So I now have a card of that. These aren't really my... They don't have a ton of information on them due to their small nature.
Yeah.
They have a weird scoring system for strength, intelligence, stamina, and mental powers. And like a one-sentence bio and first appearance, and that's about it. So, yeah,
I used to put like some of those cards in with the comics. Like if it was a first appearance of someone, I would put their card, and I'm thinking I probably saw that at a shop or something, because it's kind of a weird thing to do. But
yeah, well, this guy included Death Watch 100, who's from the Ghost Rider series, which I guess makes sense because Saltaire's is the artist to tie it in, and also because from a quick scan of eBay, you can get this Death Watch card. This is not one that is apparently unavailable. If you're interested, listener, you can jump onto eBay, and there seem to be plenty of the Death Watch 1993 Skybox card. But yeah, thanks for indulging in this revisit. I just wanted to say, you know, I paid that money. So, man, yeah, it was fun. But, you know, the shipping kills you on these things.
Of course. But since you didn't go to any cons, or you only went to one con, just think of that shipping as like the price you would have paid for a hotel or something. So really the shipping was zero.
Yeah. Good attitude. Good attitude. Well, hope you tune in to the next segment, listeners. Thanks.
My friend Leroy on the phone. I said, buddy, I'm afraid to be alone. 'Cause I got some weird ideas in my head about things to do in Denver when you're dead. Working on a steak the other day, and I saw Waddy in the Rattlesnake Cafe, dressed in black, tossing back a shot of rye, finding things to do in Denver when you die. Well, you don't need a cab to find a priest. Maybe you should find a place to stay, some place where they never change the sheets. You just roll around Denver all day. Something you should know.
is a place to go. And home is just some place to hang your head. Dream up things to do in Denver when you're dead. You don't need a cab to find a priest. Maybe you should find a place to stay. Some place where they never change the sheets. You just roll around Denver all day. You just roll.